Verna is a superstar. Did you know that? There are people within a community of faith who become consistent, faithful presence. Verna Buchanan has been part of North Lonsdale United Church for many years. And even though we spoke for quite some time, I still have not been able to hear about all of the roles that she's had at the church. Verna has run many programs. She's chaired the board. She's been a vital part of the pastoral care ministry, etc., etc., etc. You could sum it up in saying North Lonsdale United Church would not be North Lonsdale United Church without Verna.
Can you say that?
You could sum it up in saying North Lonsdale United Church would not be North Lonsdale United Church without Verna. It makes me feel proud, I think in a non-arrogant kind of way, to be part of a church that includes people like Verna. Faith matters to Verna. She speaks about wanting to know God, about what belief means to her, and about her own story of faith. Verna holds faith in a way that is real, but also inviting. The community of North Lonsdale United should be, I think, a community where we can grow in faith. It's a community in which seeking God matters. We can meet one another here, but by God's grace, we can encounter God here, even sharing in our lives together. Verna offers us a beautiful example of what it means to be strong. Strong does not mean arrogant. It does not mean that we're independent, without need of others. Strong does not mean that we're always sure of ourselves. In fact, strong can mean showing up to help, even when we are unsure of ourselves. Verna has been and is a great blessing to the community of North Lonsdale United Church. Many people have connected with the community through Verna. She carries a compassionate awareness of the needs of the people in the community. She's funny as well. I always enjoy speaking with her. I found our conversation to be insightful and honest. Verna speaks about some of the concerns that she has at this stage in her life. Even that she wonders what she has to offer now. A lot, I'm sure. And even that she thinks about the end of this life. What it means to die. We need communities in which we can find help for some of the biggest questions and concerns in our lives. Verna, while being a consistent key person in the community, also shows us what it means to bring the most important things in our lives before God, in faith and in trust. Enjoy the conversation. Well, it's a pleasure to be joined by Verna Buchanan, who is such a key part of North Lonsdale United Church. In these little interviews we're doing, you might hear someone and think, who's that again? You're probably not doing that with Verna. Most people know Verna, a key and constant part of North Lonsdale United Church. It's been many years. My first question to you is just tell us a little bit about your background, your story, your growing up as much as you want or as little as you want, however you want to start.
Okay. Well, I grew up in a little farming community called Windham Hill, which is about 7 miles outside of Spring Hill, Nova Scotia, famous for the great mine disasters there.
Oh, yeah.
And also Anne Murray's hometown. And her father was our family doctor. And so when I finished my training as a practical nurse, my dream to be an RN didn't happen. Mm-hmm. And I traveled by train across Canada to Prince George, where I had my four brothers were living in Quesnel area and one sister, and I hadn't seen my sisters, well, since I was a little girl.
You're kidding.
There was 9 of us in the family. I was 8th. And anyway, I wanted to get acquainted with them. And so I came across on the train. I thought it was very adventurous all by myself and so on.
So how old had you been then?
I was 20. Yeah, I think I was 20. Yeah.
Wow.
And anyway, I met everybody, and one brother picked me up in Prince George, and we went to Quesnel. And my plan was to go back. I had worked in Quebec for a year after I graduated from my LPN. And then I thought, well, I'll just come out here for a year. My plan was to go back to the Maritimes. And I moved into a nurse's residence in September of that year.
A nurse's residence.
And Jim was a new teacher at in Quesnel, and
he lived
right across the road.
You met Jim in Quesnel?
In a boarding house, yes. And anyway, we met the night I moved into the nurse's residence, and I would have married him the next month if he'd asked, but he didn't. In fact, it took him until the first of there was just a group, because there were two people there, a nurse in the residence who graduated with him in Squamish. He was from Squamish. Anyway, we had our first date in November at Christmas. He asked me to marry him, and he gave me, his father died suddenly at 51 of a heart attack in March of the 1960. And after he came back from his father's funeral, he gave me a ring, and we were married in August of 1960.
1960, you were married?
Yeah, and we were married 26 years when he died. And but it was...
So at that time, you have a young family.
We had three children.
How old was Jim when he died?
50.
So, I mean, his father...
And his dad was 51, yeah. And Jim was, I think, I don't remember the age of Jim when he died. Oh, I know it because I knew him, yes. He was 23, I think, when his father died.
Okay.
And my Karen was, the kids were 19, 20, and 21 when their father died.
Wow.
And it was a really hard time for all of
us. So you had three kids?
Yeah, we had three children together.
And they've all stayed local?
Yes. Karen now lives up in Powell River.
Oh, yeah, like Powell River, outside Powell River, right?
And, we didn't have our first child till 64. I started going to North Lonsdale when I was expecting Karen. I didn't grow up in a church. I knew.
So you didn't have a church background in your family?
Not at all. Occasionally we would have a minister come to the little one-room schoolhouse that I went to through grade 8. And they preached Hell and Brimstone, terrified you as a little kid. And but somehow there was something in me. I wanted to be married in a church, which we were, and I wanted to have my children. I wanted to know more about church and so on. And the so I started going there when I was expecting Karen, and she was born in 1964. And she and I were baptized together. She was 7 months.
You're kidding.
And I was 26, or I think, 27, somewhere in there. And then I've been there ever since. And I wasn't that active because I had the three babies in 34 months, so I was pretty busy at home, and I was a stay-at-home mother. John had a full scholarship to SFU for football. Linda had a full scholarship to UBC for basketball. But she left that after a year. Thankfully, her dad was still living, and I had talked to him about that. She thought she wanted to be a teacher, and then she changed to nursing. She graduated VGH, and then she took her degree at UBC. And
then what moved her towards, like, municipal politics?
Well, she was invited or asked if she'd consider going on the school board. So she was on the school board, and then she was approached to run for city council, which she did. And she was in city council for two terms, and she's finishing now her second term.
It's her second term, yeah.
Yes.
When's the election?
In November.
It's this year?
I think it's November, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
So you get connected with North Lonsdale. It's interesting that you say you didn't have that background, but then the church... I'm putting this out there, you don't have to, the church became kind of a stable presence in your life.
And
maybe some stability that you hadn't necessarily had yourself
and
as a child.
And our church was so busy when I started going there, and the kids were in Sunday school. We had hundreds of kids. I looked after the nursery for about 3 years. And I was really missing the sermons and so on. My children were a little bit older that time, but Al Donald, he did everything in our church. He was another Dave Rupert.
Dave's name keeps coming up,
yeah,
Dave Rupert.
And everybody absolutely loved him.
Yeah.
And he put speakers where the preschool is now.
So you could hear the sermons.
So we could hear the sermons and so on. But I had about 20, 30 little kids, and we had a nursery. Jeanette Davis and I painted the nursery. We had cribs in there for babies. Goodness. Yeah. Yeah.
You have had a number of roles at Northwestern United.
Yeah.
I mean, you have, we had spoken earlier with Don Blackadar, and he mentioned their connection to the church, having moved from Calgary when they had young children, and that there was a program, he called it Child Mind. Is that, mm-hmm. that's the correct name?
Child Mind.
And he said you could drop off your kids, and it was at that time kind of what was happening socially. Mom could drop off her kids and get some errands done type of thing, or go do some shopping.
Strictly.
So you ran Child Mind, or you were part of the team?
The background of that was that the church, they had a program called Carefree. You've heard about the Carefree cupboard. It's where they kept supplies, et cetera, right off the kitchen. But they ran that program for nearly 26 years. There was not much in the community for people who had special needs children. And there were two, I believe they were nurses. I'm not positive about that. They decided they would start something like this. They got licensing from public health. And they had people who would go and pick the children up. The mother didn't even have to leave the house, pick up the child, bring it to Child Mind, to Carefree, and they'd take care of them till lunchtime.
Wow.
And do things with them and so on. And after 26 years, of course, there was more and more things in the community, so that program died off.
Right.
There was two women, I believe, left in the program. Now, they were adults at this point. And Georgia Heed and I were on not pastoral care. We had a really active outreach program. And somebody, our minister at the time was Cliff Henning, who was a South African minister. And somebody came in off the street. They'd heard about Carefree, and they asked Cliff if the church had ever considered doing a similar program, but just for moms who needed a safe place.
Right, so not specifically for people with special needs?
No, it was just strictly a three-hour babysitting program. And being a new member on the team, I said, because I love a little kid. I would be interested in doing that. So Georgia was involved. We didn't have problems getting licensing because of our history with Carefree. But everybody was worried about Barbara. Ruth, I think, was the name of the other person, and I think she went into some kind of care. And I said to them, well, Barbara, she was high functioning, but she had some mental health, not mental health, but mental.
Developmental.
Yes, that's the right words. And I said, she can come and work with me. And it was absolutely one of the best gifts given to her. She was so good with the mums, loved her with little children and this sort of thing. And she, at one point, amazing, as this program developed, I gave her a key to the church, and she was so proud to have a key that she could unlock the door and get in there. And we'd had to set up that big auditorium every morning. When we first started out, we had several volunteers from the church. A few were friends, but it was really small when we started. We were up in the preschool area. I had one little boy the first morning. And eventually it just grew and grew. And I did it as a volunteer for 6 years. And it was, again, Al Donald came to me. He was on the board. And he asked, actually, he invited me to join the board. And then he said to me, Verna, you have to start taking some income for this, because nobody's going to do this for nothing when you leave.
Yeah.
And so I did, and I kind of looked it around. And I had been getting to the place in my life where John was 9, so kids were 9, 10, 11, that I didn't want to go back to, Jim was encouraging me to go back and get my RN. I didn't want to do that. Because I really like being a mom.
Yeah.
Because the life I had at home, this was my haven.
So where was Jim working at that time?
He started at Handsworth School.
Yeah, okay.
And he was there for 7 years, then went to Carson for 7 and then Dargah.
Okay.
Anyway, I thought to myself, it came to me one day, Vernie, you're doing exactly what you like, so why don't you make a proposal to the board that you will do this, you will organize. I'll get the moms as the volunteers. They'll do one day every 6 weeks. And so we charge $1 a morning for this program. I said, just to make things simple, let's charge $5 a month. And I had all the time.
That's incredible.
30 children. 26 of them were from 18 months to 3 years of age. Once they heard three, they went on to preschool because there were lots of preschools then. And we had four babies under 18 months of age. And at any given time, I had at least, as the program grew, because we went from one morning then to two, and I think we only, I can't really remember if we went, I think we went the 5 days, Monday through Friday. And
it's like a whole staff then. You must
it was.
Have.
We had, yeah, I had to have so many moms for, I had to have one mother, two mothers for the four babies.
Yeah.
And then the rest, I can't remember the ratio and so on. But it was fun. I just loved it.
Incredible.
I absolutely loved it.
And to think that, you know, they wouldn't be the only ones, that people like Don and Jan, the Blackadars, came through that program. Right?
I had three people who, when they knew they were expecting another baby, asked to go on the wait list. We had always, I'd have at least 25 people on a wait list to try to get into the program. It wasn't really a program. It was, but, you know, we did snacks with the kids. I sang with them.
That's
big
amazing.
Auditorium was just like a, we had to take it down, put it up every
day. So you mean the downstairs
the big auditorium?
Yeah. Downstairs.
The big auditorium, yeah.
I just think because, you know, right now we're 2026 and your daughter's mayor and it's your place in the community. How you running, helping to run a program like that has such a community aspect to it. And one of the things we've spoken about in these conversations is how church just in Canada has moved from many people. Church used to be a social hub. That's where a lot of these programs kind of found their mm-hmm. footing and their place. And that largely some of that's moved to the larger community now. So now somebody like your daughter is overseeing, you know, a place where there's some of these programs in a community mm-hmm. center mm-hmm. or a recreation center or whatever.
Yes, yes. And so when I made my proposal to the board about being paid, making it a paid position, I said, I'll go downstairs and wait while the board discusses this and so on. So I went down and I waited and I waited and I waited. And I'm thinking, well, I guess this didn't fly. They forgot they had sent that I was downstairs. Cliff came running down, gave me a big hug.
Oh, Verna, that's such an amazing picture. I think I've been in meetings like that as a pastor where I've been like, oh no, we didn't go tell so and so. I can picture you kind of. And of course, their news to you was positive.
Yeah.
Even that night, they didn't say,
we'll talk about it. There was no hesitation at all.
That's probably why they forgot, because it was so easy. Yeah. On to the next thing.
But the.
So then you joined the board. How long after that? Do you remember?
Oh, I don't remember how. I don't remember when I went on the board. But I was on the board 40 years when I left 2 years ago. I served on the board.
So a lot of that time would have been with Don's on the board at the same time, Don Blackadar.
Yes. Oh, yeah. Yeah, Don was our secretary for Herb Jenkin, but before him was—
Did you chair it ever?
I did. I was chairing it when Robin came.
Wow.
I chaired it, I believe, 3 years. There was one other woman, Elizabeth Frith, who you might remember that name. She was a librarian at Argyle.
Oh, you're kidding.
Yeah. And
she
chaired the board. I don't know, when I look back on it, I don't know that I did a good job of it, but Al and Joan Wilkins' husband, Jeff, they were big supporters and helped me. Part of my... And it's hard for me to talk about this. Part of my issue with what happened to me as a child, I didn't get the education I hoped to get. And that has been a hurt in my heart.
You carried it.
Forever. And if anybody ever told me I would marry a man who had a university degree, went on to get his master's degree in education, and then became a principal and was well-respected in the community, that I would raise three great young people who have been very
thoughtful,
accomplished
considerate,
in their lives.
Intelligent, yeah.
Yeah, and But it's something that I have struggled with all my life, that I don't have a good education.
That's interesting that you would, all the time I've known you and your connection in North Lonsdale, your capability, your reliability, it's so evident and obvious. But one of the things you're helping with here, as other people hear this, is the places where we can carry a sense of inadequacy, or, oh, these other people are, you know, they have this and I must not, kind of, because I think virtually everybody I know who'd be listening to this would not know that mm-hmm. about you. Mm-hmm. I would never have known that
yeah.
about you, that there's this peace that
it's always been.
I'll tell you right now, and a little personal story, my connection with you, and I don't remember the exact details, but in my I hadn't been there that long, but had long enough to preach as part of North Lonsdale. So I come from my story is I was at a church for 30 years and it was great, loved it, didn't necessarily end well. And so I'm looking for a church that to kind of go and sit and be quiet in, right? Mm-hmm. And I thought, I can't go to like a standard evangelical church because I know too many of those people. So I thought, where will I go and kind of sit in the back? And I knew Jay Lynn, and I knew Jay Lynn and Jason Biasi, and I knew Jay Lynn was at North Lonsdale, and I knew Robin. I was close with Robin, mm-hmm. Just professionally through the years. And I thought, I'll go to North Lonsdale and I'll kind of sit quietly. And of course, what happens is I'm not the quietest person, first of all, but you know, I get to know people. And I think one Sunday, Jay Lynn's like, I'll be away. Can you fill in and preach? And I'd already met you and I'm speaking with you, but I don't remember, you won't recall this probably either, but this kind of thing ministers remember, like the contours of this. Preached a sermon and you came up to me afterwards. It wasn't at the back yet.
Oh,
you were still close to where you sit normally. And you just so gently said, Todd, you said this thing in the sermon and that made me think. And then you actually talked about your own self-reflection. And you actually acknowledged something that you'd said, I think, to someone, maybe to me, before the service started. And you said, something you said there made me rethink that I think I have to look here or change this way of seeing. But you weren't like being self-deprecating or anything, but it was so, honestly, like, I was like, thank you, God, for this person who, because I think sometimes we can look at others and not realize the inner dialogue that we have. And Verna, I've picked that up with you. You are so capable, so intelligent, so thoughtful, all those kinds of things. But this piece that you say, when I was running that, this is what was in my head. When I was there, I didn't feel always adequate all the time.
I thought you were going to relate the story when I came up after you preached one Sunday morning.
Yeah.
And you weren't even in the narthex. And I went up to you and I gave you a big hug. And I said, I hope it's okay to call you, to tell you I love you as a Christian brother.
I absolutely remember. And it is this way that we engage as people in a community of faith. And of course, any title, whether this is a minister or the pastor or somebody running Child Mind, or that all disappears to some degree in what it means to be people together in a particular place in a particular time, especially a community of faith.
Yeah.
And when that engagement can happen, and I've seen that with you. I mean, we served on the pastoral care committee and such together, and you were always one of the people right away I knew. Like, I would go to a pastoral care meeting and I don't know how you had so many people in your mind, and it was all like, so-and-so had this fall, or so-and-so is dealing with this, but now, and I don't want to force it too much, but sometimes when we carry any sense of inadequacy or a sense of what it means to carry our past, right? We can overcompensate, but it also allows us to be open to the tensions and struggles that other people carry. Yeah. And that's you in this place.
Well, I really want to tell you about being at North Lonsdale for 10 years. And Jim was vice principal at Carson and Tom Carlisle was the principal. And Tom's wife was diagnosed with an inoperable brain tumor, 36 years of age, two little girls. And she died within 3 months. And I went through hell because I came to realize I'd been in this church for almost 10 years and I did not have a personal faith. I did not read my Bible at home. I said a little prayer with the kids at bedtime. And I went to see our minister, who was Chuck Raymond, and I had never experienced a death. I had this big family,
really?
But there had not been a death. But I went to Chuck, or to Cliff, and I said, you know, I was sobbing. I've just realized, as hard as it is that I know this friend is dying, I have no faith. I have no faith. I don't know who Jesus is. Other than I listen to the minister on Sunday morning, and I'm doing stuff to try and please people here in this church. But I have no personal
faith. But like,
faith.
How it lives in your own mind, your own prayerfulness.
And I said to him, I could be on my knees and pray till they fall off, and nothing is stopping this tumor from growing. She was an RN. She knew that if they tried to excise it, she would be left mentally impaired. She didn't want that for him or her two girls. And he said to me, Verna, the person I want you to pray for is for you, that God will give you some understanding of what your friend is going through, what you're going through, da-da-da-da. The day of her funeral, it was a private funeral, Jim was a pallbearer, he'd gone ahead of me, and I remember kneeling in the living room, and I literally cried out, God, if you're real, I want to believe. And my life went upside down. I got to the place where I considered leaving North Lonsdale because there was no adult Bible study going on.
Right,
there was no, and I shared, and I was by this point very involved in UCW at the church, and one of the women and I were very close, and I said—
That'd be United Church Women?
United Church Women. I said to Donna, I think I'm going to have to leave here because my needs, I can't.
Right.
I was like a sponge.
Kind of grow.
We
often hear that. It's like there's,
And I said, I'd love to be in a women's Bible group, and I don't know where. She said, well, Verna, let's do it together. So she had a friend who had started a neighborhood, and she came with us the first morning, and that Bible group stayed together for 32 years, I think. She's gone now. Many of the women that were with us in that are gone. Joan Wilkins was part of that.
Yeah.
Elizabeth Frith.
Wow.
And so on. And my faith, it actually became almost problematic between Jim and myself because I was like, he said to me one night, Vern, I think you're spending too much time at the church. And I said, do you ever come home and there's not a hot meal on the table and your shirts are all pressed, your pants are pressed for school?
He did always look good,
And he made the comment, well, he said, I guess if it were another man, I could confront him, but I don't know how you would confront Jesus Christ.
Oh, that is amazing. Because I knew him and just like...
And he struggled. Totally. He struggled. He said he believed in a greater power, but he couldn't accept the resurrection and all of that
Like
stuff.
Many people.
But he supported the church financially.
Yeah.
He supported what I was doing. But I thought, got my back up and slammed in the bathroom, and I thought, okay, that's what I'll just stay home, be a good little wife, and da 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 da. And I've only twice think I've heard God in my head, but I heard a voice say, is that all I mean to you? And I just said, God, please, just give me the words to tell this man that this isn't going to hurt our life. It's going to improve our life together. And God did give me the words.
Verna, that's amazing.
And anyway, it was never an issue again. And in fact, the December he died, I had said to him, I was supposed to usher in January, and I said, Jim, would you consider coming and ushering with me? Because I think everybody in the church thinks I'm a widow because I'm always by myself. And he said, yeah, Vern, but if I go, you'll want me to do something else. And
he was smart. He knew.
He said,
churches, once they get you.
Because he was very busy at school. He attended all the musicals.
Sports. I remember at the time students could smoke in the courtyard.
Yes, yes.
And he was so good at connecting with kind of everybody, right? And sometimes it'd, you know, be in this kind of lookout, and there he was with his kids just hanging out in the courtyard. Just he was connected.
He said to me, okay, Vern, I will do it if you promise me you will not nag me to get involved. We did try.
But you say he died in December.
Yes. So this was, we were to do this together in January. He died December 6th. I told you we were at a wedding and he died up in Squamish. And I ushered in January.
You did.
I thought, boy, you went to some length to get out of doing fulfilling your promise. And it wasn't until March of that year that it was Good Friday, actually. I totally fell apart in the church. I came to the realization that he was indeed dead. He wasn't coming home. He wasn't just away. And it was hard as a mother to see what my kids were going through, too.
Oh, yeah.
It was just such a heartbreak. Yeah, so that was my journey as far as my faith, and my faith has just grown over the years.
I mean, sometimes in church experience, we can look for these conversion moments, and some churches have you pray the prayer, you accept, you know, there's these various aspects. In a United Church, and North Lonsdale is an interesting church within the United Church, the denomination, because it's not, you know, extreme on one end or the other in terms of like polarized far right or far left, or and yet, so whether it's like these conversion moments, you say, clearly kneeling in the living room,
mm-hmm. I can see myself doing it,
hearing God's call or voice, or saying, I have this desire for you, for your presence, God.
Yeah.
That it's interesting that you were able to, I don't mean that in it, but like how much you served and worked, volunteered and ran things even before that.
Mm-hmm.
But after that, I would imagine it's a bit different as well. I really appreciate that you mentioned this difficulty that comes up. Sometimes at these moments of great spiritual growth or awakening, or whatever we'd call them, it can stir within us a discontent that, of course, and I think you did stay, but because some people don't know what to do with that discontent, and they become, it's not to downplay your story or to judge it, but that discontent can become like very self-focused.
Yeah.
You know, I need this. But the fact that you stay in this community and carry this faith in this community becomes then, now you're volunteering for many, many years after that, right? But these are key kind of currents and changes.
Yeah.
How do you feel different now, at the age you're at now? Those formative years where your kids were younger are behind you. But I've always seen you, I don't mean to just put you on a pedestal here, but I've always seen you as a very forward-looking person. Someone who, you don't feel that?
No, because I've stopped doing so, I'm not doing very much at the church anymore.
And that's very different
for you.
And
I've gone through I would call almost a grief.
Yeah.
That I'm old now.
Mm-hmm.
And I think about dying.
Yeah, sure.
What will it be like? Is it going to be horrible? Am I going to lose my memory before that happens? All of these things. And it isn't just me. In talking to other women around my age, sometimes you almost feel like you're invisible.
Yeah.
With your children. They're all, their lives are active. They're all doing this and this and this. And I'm not a big traveler. I never have been.
Right.
And
right.
So I've adjusted.
Yeah.
But I'm learning to live with myself. I don't have the peace in my heart that I'd really like to have, because,
sure,
again, I listen to my family talking and they're doing all these things. That's when I realize, that's when my lack of education really hurts me. And I get the map out and I try to figure out all this. Or the history. John's a history major.
Okay.
And he knows all the history around the wars that have been fought and this sort of thing. And he'll talk to me about things. He and I are really close. And
that's awesome.
And I'm almost embarrassed because I have to say, John, I don't know where is that connected to.
Why do you think you feel an embarrassment?
I know,
still? Because that wouldn't bother him at all.
And Jim used to say this to me, but you can't imagine sometimes because most of our friends were all in education. And there I am. Yeah, I was a licensed practical nurse and I was good at my job. I knew that. Any RN I worked with were so happy to have me on shift with them.
Yeah.
But it was always, and even now when I'm with my daughter-in-law, she and John both have their masters.
Yeah.
She's an English teacher, was an English teacher and so on. I feel it so, even when I write her a thank you or something or write her a card. How's my English? How's my grammar?
There's a couple things that, you know, at play there at least, right? I would imagine just your experience and your education, or as you express it, lack thereof, whatever mm-hmm. that means. And then your sensibility of yourself, like who you are. And so much of that goes back to our growing up and our stories. You're looking out again at the church. Like, so there we are on a Sunday morning. You see so-and-so and so-and-so and so-and-so. And I see this person. And I think, even if I get to know them a little bit, I think, here's kind of who they are. Here's what matters to them. I would never have known that you carried this sense of mm-hmm. like, I don't know if I measure up. And without, I'm not, you know, I understand how I'm making this statement. The ways in which I hear you spoken about, like the "oh, Verna," like even with, this is only our second interview in this series, it's not surprising to me that you came up in the first one saying, "Verna was there. Verna did this. Verna was so good. Verna was so good." Like, that most people probably would never know that you carry this. And so here's what the statement I'm going to make, and I'm saying it as kind of an artistic statement, right? Like not a pragmatic, practical. You are, in many people's estimation, like the strongest person I know. Verna, this consistent presence. But what an encouragement it is to us, or a potential gift, to know that while you were that consistent presence, the strong person, that people show up to this program and there you are. Mm-hmm. That while you are that strong person to them, you're not in your own estimation often.
Yeah,
and there is great hope in that because you were able to accomplish those things. You have been a tremendous blessing. Now, maybe one of the biggest challenges you'll face, what does it mean for all of us? Because we'll all go through this if we live long enough.
Mm-hmm.
What does it mean to be ourselves as our world is getting smaller?
Mm-hmm.
As we go back into that church, not running all the things, not being, and there must, I'm not, I know you enough to know, I'm assuming this doesn't happen, but almost, I feel it on your behalf, okay? Where I'm like, everybody, do you know how much this person who's sitting over here did? She's not able to do that right now, but we wouldn't be here without this person.
Well, this is the other, I think to myself, I think I still have a fair bit of energy.
You sure do.
And so on, but I think that there are still things that ways God can use me. And if it's just to pick up a phone, or I'm on the prayer team with Lois and Lori and Shirley. And I mean, the prayer list is this long.
Yeah.
I could spend all day at it and so on. But I have to tell you that I think God has a sense of humor, because you may or may not have heard when Robin used to do 3-hour service on Good Friday. And it would be in segments, and he would ask different people to speak, their personal stories, this sort of thing. And he asked me, he knew my personal story.
Mm.
And the one he gave me was from Scripture, "Forgive them, for they know not what they do." And I thought, you got to be kidding me. Because up till just not long before that, I knew that I absolutely hated my father, and I had never told anybody about my abuse till I was 21. When Jim and I were married, we were home, and the night we got home, we traveled across Canada. We drove 1,200 miles the last day to get there, and we went out to get our overnight bag, and Dad went to bed. He didn't even stay up, and I was so proud of this husband of mine, a teacher and all of this.
Yeah.
And I just lost it that night, and I just sobbed to Jim. He was the first person I ever told, and figured he'd leave the next day. But now it's this Easter segment, and I said to Robin, I don't know. He said, Verna, I think you could do this. And I sat down that night. I prayed that night. I sat down. I got up in the middle of the night, and it was like somebody else was writing.
I know that feeling.
Pouring out of my
hand. I know that feeling.
Yeah. And I realized that I had not forgiven him, and I could not truly ask the Lord to forgive my trespasses if I could not forgive this father who had hurt me so deeply. And and I was glad I was able to do that. And I thought, I'll probably faint when I get up there. And I was calm. I was...
Wow.
Yeah.
I mean, that, I don't mean to over-spiritualize, but I don't think I'm over-spiritualizing. In my experience, that's the Holy Spirit.
Oh, it is. Right?
It is so often, so many times.
But it's interesting. I find, and maybe I imagine this, but I had a real encounter with the Holy Spirit when we went away on the Alpha weekend with Robin.
Yeah.
And I've shared it with people in the women particularly. And I can tell by the looks on their faces that either they never have or wish they could, but it's all, I'm getting the feeling that they don't believe me, that
Or like it's a foreign experience. What's she talking about?
My husband, Don, because now I'm married again.
Yeah.
And he thought it had a heart attack because I wasn't moving. I was lying on the floor. And I have to describe, Robin came up to me and he asked me to close my eyes. And I could sense I could just feel his hand on the top of my hair.
Like
it was not a weight on my head.
Yeah.
And he just said something to the effect, "Lord, pour your spirit into Verna," and my head went.
I can hear him say that. He's
on
got
his
that
chest. I had no sense of, my head literally hit his chest, and I just melted down on the floor. And I had the most amazing, profound sense of love I have ever imagined. It started from my toes, this warmth just spreading through my whole body. And I did not want to come out of that wherever I was. I wish I could hear over here somebody was laughing, over here somebody was crying. Turned out it was Bill Keene, because he and I talked later, and Bill, we were both in doubt. I remember sitting with my husband, Don, thinking, Lord, if you're real, I want to really feel, I mean, if this Holy Spirit is really real, I want to experience this. Bill said he was doing the same thing. But his impact was, he cries easily.
Yes.
If you've ever seen him.
Yes.
Yeah, he gets choked up.
I do too, but yes, he does. Yeah. We share that.
And then I went back and I prayed, I hoped that Don wouldn't come back to the room with me right away.
Was it at the church?
No, we were up in an outdoor school.
Okay.
And I thought, oh, I hope he doesn't come back. I went back to my room and I have never prayed like this in my life. It was just pouring out of me, like, wasn't like it was me even talking. And then when we drove home, I didn't want to talk on the way home. I didn't go out for 3 days.
I didn't
want anyone to rain on this incredible love that I was feeling.
I love that you told us that.
Yeah. And the same when Don died, he died in September, that New Year's, I went to bed. I was just sobbing like I'm starting another year all alone.
You've had two husbands die.
Two husbands died. And I said to him, God, I have no words. I have no words. I don't know what to pray. And a voice said, be still and know I am Lord. And I've told that story to some of my friends and they just look at me like, yeah. But they were real. I didn't imagine these things.
Oh, no, not at all. I am so grateful that you tell us that. And I think I'm going to move to kind of wrap things up there, because there is something in you sharing your experience, your roles through the years. But as we look at the community at North Lonsdale, and again, looking around the people in the pews and the people showing up, that we would be a church that is open to these supernatural manifestations of God's presence, that yes, we come here together, we're consistent, we serve, and even the respect we have, that to some people it just seems foreign. And I know that there are people, and I'm really grateful for the people who don't experience necessarily things like this, but keep going and keep serving and don't hear God's voice in the same ways. And I think in some ways those are more people. But by God's grace, you're someone, I have this too. You are someone who I'm now thinking of kneeling in the living room, kneeling in the living room, and then having this experience at the Alpha weekend as two parts of similar things, right? Mm-hmm. That there are these times when God just shows up in power. But most of the time, you're just showing up, doing the things, doing the stuff. But those moments are so key. They change our lives. They change the way we see the world. What was the name of the woman who died, the vice principal or the principal's wife?
Jackie Carlisle,
And then how we recollect back to, you said, like, God must have a sense of humor. By God's grace also, and your own experience, and sometimes this comes connected to pain as well. You're funny. You're a funny, engaging person who, right? And how close some of this, the tragic stuff or the sad things in our lives with the humor that, and also now I see a little bit more. I'm not like all in on this sense of inadequacy. I'll continue to pray that God, you know, works there and heals and whatever else. But I think sometimes the ability to be humorous and also kind of self-reflective as well, those things can come together. Yeah. And so,
well, when you live alone all the time, you don't laugh a lot.
Well, we have to find ways to.
And
certainly not to sound trite over this. All things will be redeemed. All the losses we've suffered, all the pain we've experienced, that somehow in God's way, all is redeemed and all is made well. This is a deep consideration of who you are. I'm really grateful for you, your willingness to share it. It helps give some shape and contours to as much as people are willing to be open in future conversations. But certainly it fills in for me, like seeing you there in a church. Because on a Sunday, it says, hello, how are you? Oh, I'm pretty good today, thank you. And then to know, right?
Well,
anything else you want to, any like little bit to end? Anything
God
you want
blessed
people to
me, I think, when Don came back to the church going, he was probably a youth when I first started going there, because I was 7 years older than him when we married. I was 57, he wasn't 50. And he was going through a painful divorce that he didn't want, and so on. And when he and I married, we got married during the church service.
Wow.
It was beautiful. All the Sunday school kids, there were quite a lot of them then. They came upstairs. They were all sitting around us on the floor. And choir sang some special music. I was singing in the choir at the time. My girls stood with me.
You're kidding.
Yeah, it was really lovely.
What year was that?
Oh, sorry.
I knew. I don't mean to test you.
He died in 2009. I always get it mixed up. Yeah, September 11th, 2009, he died. And we were married 14 years when he died. In fact, the Saturday before, we'd been to a 50th wedding anniversary, a renewal of vows for friends. That's the last picture I have, Don and me together, Pat Gray, and Phyllis Sindel, and they're gone now. The three of them are gone. But anyway, we had just found out that weekend, the week before, that the cancer was back after a 5-year remission. We were married 5 years. He had a 9-year remission, and he'd had chemo that weekend, blood, and platelets. He looked like $1 million. He was dead 10 days later.
Wow.
And, but I was joking about, oh yeah, well, I've been married 40 years. It's taken two men to get there, but never dreaming that in 10 days I'd be widowed again.
Oh, Verna, God bless
but
you.
At that stage of my life, for God to have brought Don into my life, because he was a believer. We went to Bible studies together. We were at the outdoor school and this sort of thing. And he was very involved in the church as well. He was on the board. He was our treasurer right up till he died. He's handyman. He was on the property committee.
Wow.
That's how I got to know. I was chairing property committee for the second time. And yeah.
Bless you. Oh, Verna, I'm so grateful. And we will continue the conversation. And I know, I guarantee you one thing, can't guarantee much, but I know in future interviews I have with others, your name's going to come up again because it just always, well, Verna, well, and Verna. So thank you so much.
If I am, if you're still here ministering at North Lonsdale and so on, and I'm on my deathbed, be there with me. You have a gift when you pray, when you, you're so sincere and you're,
thanks.
I see your face shine.
Thanks.
Your
I love it.
Yeah.
And you've meant a lot to me in the time there.
Yeah.
Bright light. And it's interesting. You talk about these kinds of more conversion moments or these supernatural moments because, the way that God blesses us in putting us in a community.
Mm-hmm.
So thanks. We will do our parts.
Yeah.
Amen.
Yeah.
The People in Your Community is a production of North Lonsdale United Church in partnership with Reflector Project. Inquiries can be made to Todd Weeb through the North Lonsdale Church office. Thank you for listening.